Emmaus, good morning. Want to talk about the weather? No, are we over it? Okay, good. If we haven't had a chance to meet, my name is Jeremiah Aha, and I'm grateful to be a part of the community here, my family and I, for the past few years. I met the lead pastor, who's out today. Hey, these gentlemen are here with Bibles or notes. If you would like those, just slip up a hand. And then you'll be asked just to stand up and say your name and then tell us a story about you. No, we won't. Just slip up a hand, and they'll get that to you so you can follow along. Turn to Mark 6, Mark chapter 6. I'll meet you there in about 20 minutes. But turn to Mark 6. We'll get there, and the entire time you'll be wondering, how is all of this going to land? And I pray that it will. All right? So met Pastor Nate, who's out today about 10 years ago at the In-N-Out Burger in Roseville. Woohoo is right. Great things happen around a table. There are memorable moments that happen around a table. I mean, this table, 2,000 years ago, something happened. There was a meal shared, and we're still talking about it, right? So about 2016... till about the 1900s or so, like the turn of the century, until 2016, I was involved in full-time ministry here in the area, and then went and pursued another master's in psychology and a license to be a therapist. So by day, I'm a licensed therapist, have a small private practice, but really the bulk of my work is spent working with other therapists that are in schools across California and New York City, helping students and families with those that have challenges with their mental health, and they are many this day and age. And so that's what's happening by day. On Sunday, we get together here with you. Super grateful for the invitation, as I've, I guess, spoke many times over the past several years, and it's always good to be invited back. That means you did okay the last time. And so grateful to get to know all of you. Shout out to Rich and Melissa, Angela, and Pastor Nate. And I think we're ready to go. We have a talk on how to be angry is our series. So I've been really typecast here as a therapist and also involved in ministry. Nate's like, you seem perfect for the job. Why don't you talk about this? We're going to do 5 weeks on a sermon series called How to Be Angry. Real talk about frustration, control, justice, and hope. And by the end of the 30 minutes today, you will never, ever again get TO'd, peeved, irritated, frustrated, irked, annoyed, aggravated, any of that. It's all going to be solved this morning, so get ready, all right? Results may vary, though, okay? All right, let's start here with five places of common ground before we dive in. Some things that I think we'll start out with a real easy one to think we can agree on, really find some relatable premises before we go into a topic that is very complex, that can feel a bit unsettling, maybe some things you disagree with, and that's okay. So let's start where we can all agree. And number one, five places of common ground, there's plenty to be angry about. Okay, we're good. Okay, good. Okay, good. There's plenty to be angry about, and you can take that to as insignificant as you like to, like, I've watered this plant for every single day, and now it decides to die, all the way to, you know, this is happening with my family, or this is happening halfway around the world. Wherever you'd like to take it, there are plenty of reasons to be upset and to be angry. Number two, anger is one of 33,000 different emotions within the human experience. That's a lot of feelings right there, and I have the privilege of having a 15-year-old and a 10-year-old living in our home. They're our daughters. And I get to see most of those emotions by lunchtime. It's pretty great. It's pretty great. And maybe you've experienced the same. So anger is one of 33,000 different emotions, and it's not any better or worse than any other emotion. Anger is. Emotions aren't good and emotions aren't bad. There might be some that are unpleasant and some that are a little more comfortable, but emotions just are. So don't have to assign any value or any moral quotient to them. Anger is no different than fear or surprise or delight or resentment or guilt and on and on and on, okay? It is okay. Leads us into number three. It is okay, and there's nothing wrong with being angry. And this is the point right now where the wheels might come off for some of us here in the room, where it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And here's the reason why. For many of us growing up, we maybe, even maybe now, we live in an environment where anger is one of the maybe one or two emotions we see in our home every day. Or this is maybe what you grew up in. And so your experience with anger, is it something that is harmful, that it ruins relationships, that it's destructive, that it is loud, that it's scary, that it's mean? And so me saying, hey, there's nothing wrong with being angry, I'm not condoning any of the aggression that's happening. But what I am saying is it is okay to feel angry. Or on the flip side, maybe you grew up in an environment where your feelings as a whole were invalidated, where no one asked you how you felt, where no one cared how you felt, where you were overlooked. Your feelings on any particular thing wasn't particularly important, and so you've kept anger and the other 33,000 plus to yourself. And so having someone tell you an emotion as evocative as anger being okay, being angry about this, I'll tell you that much right now. Okay, we'll get into how that applies a little bit later. Try my best, Chris. Okay. It's okay to be angry. Nothing unchristlike about being angry. God gets angry. Jesus gets angry. We're going to talk about that. It's okay to have that emotion. So it doesn't mean you're sinning when you're angry. It's what we do with that. Emotions are just appraisals of situations. They're just kind of assessments of what's happening. So it's all right to have that. So if you're still with me, but maybe you're not, and that's okay too, because number four is this. We're going to call them BWAs. For the next 5 weeks, BWAs. And that is, maybe on just this last point, you're thinking, but what about, that's BWA. There's going to be very specific situations that you're living through, or memories that you've had, and things that are set up here that you're going to go, but what about if another person does that, right? Very specific. The risk that we run a lot of times from here in preaching is speaking in generalities, and in maybe universal truths or broad statements, but you are all each specific people with specific situations, with specific set of circumstances and journeys. And so there will be times, whether it be this morning or the next 5 weeks, that your first thought is, but what about, I mean, you mean to tell me that this person did that and I'm supposed to, but this is why we don't do this alone, we do it in community. So if you have those questions, maybe there's someone here in the room that you trust, that you can have those open conversations with. Maybe it's someone here on staff. Just take all your questions to Nate, though. He says he wants all those very specific, tough conversations, okay? So it's okay to say, but what about? I'm just asking and inviting you to maybe sit in the discomfort, whether it be this morning or the weeks moving forward. It's gonna be okay. God can handle it, and I know you can too. And I pray that the Holy Spirit helps us to have an open mind to hear what is being said on something that is as complex as anger. Shout out to the late David Paulson. That's where we get But What Abouts. His book is called Good and Angry. I recommend it to you. He actually has done amazing work at the intersection of the church and psychology and talked about how they don't have to be at odds, how it can be okay that we are complex beings and there are feelings and emotions and we also are Christ followers. And he's published many books. One of them is Good and Angry. He actually passed and is with the Lord since 2019. But he had that in the first few pages of his book. He said, hey, you might have some BWAs. And I was like, what is that acronym, right? But what about? So if you have those, it's okay. Last place of common ground. Last place of common ground. Anger is just the tip of the iceberg. Anger is just the tip of the iceberg. And we'll see that that is, you might have it there on your notes, that's more than just kind of a common expression. That's going to be a little more literal, maybe, than you think this morning, okay? It's just the tip of the iceberg. This first half of our morning is going to be spent kind of talking in concepts and abstract, maybe as if I, like, have a whiteboard up here, and you're in anger, I won't say management, because then you guys don't think, like, was he calling us? But just, like, learning about anger. And then the second half is going to be very practical and very personal, okay? So for those of you that like a good plan, we're going to talk about concepts first, and then we're going to get very specific, and then I promise we'll end up in Mark 6. Deal? Okay. Very good. Very good. Love the participation. Let's start with the working definition of anger, and this is all actually also from David Paulson. He defines it as this. Anger is the active displeasure towards something that's, and here's the key part, important enough for us to care about. There's usually feelings that are tense, it's unpleasant, it's uncomfortable, it's unsettling, and it has a spectrum, right? We can go from like being like kind of annoyed to aggravated all the way to like raging mad, right? Incensed, furious, right? And whatever we are on that particular continuum, all that would be kind of the umbrella of anger. And anger is this active displeasure towards something that's important enough to us. For example, let's say someone in here says, hey, I got a job interview tomorrow. It's going to be at lunch. I need to borrow a tie. Can I borrow a tie? I got rid of all my ties during quarantine. I never thought I'd have to wear one again. Can I borrow a necktie? And I say, sure, no problem. I got a closet full of neckties. All right? So I give you a tie. And you come back. Say, how was the interview? It was great. You know, she talked about the job and everything. Here's the deal, though. We had Caesar salad. And some Caesar dressing got all over the front of the tie. And you know, if you've done laundry, if there's something oil-based, that you can kiss that piece of clothing goodbye. That's it. That stain is going to be on there. And I say, hey, it's okay. I got other ties. It's not that important. I didn't give you like a very special tie. And I gave you kind of one of my throwaway ties. Okay? So we're good. I didn't trust you, is what I'm saying. All right? So that's something that's not really important. I don't think you understand how relevant this is going to be a little bit later. It really is. Okay? But let's say you say, hey, can I borrow your car to go up to Mount Shasta? We're going to go camping. I'm like, yeah, you seem like a good person. I mean, you ruined my tie, but that's fine. You can take my car. And so you take the car up there and you bring it back. And then you say to me, hey, I got two questions for you, actually. And you look kind of nervous. This is very finger pointy. I don't mean it to be that, but it's just a hypothetical, okay? And you say, remember how your car used to smell? And I go, yeah. And then you say, have you ever gotten into a fight with like a dozen skunks inside your car before? And then I lose it. Because that's important enough for me to care about, because now my car smells completely like a family of skunks. And that's irreversible. You can't put enough tomato juice inside car interior to get rid of that. I'm sure there's a YouTube video somewhere, but that's not coming out. I'm going to be upset. I'm going to be angry. That's something that I care about, right? Does that make sense? This is taken to ridiculous lengths to make the point, but you understand something that we care about. For example, many of you on, say, Sunday afternoons watch a particular sport, and if your team wins or loses, it significantly impacts the way you feel for the rest of the day. No shame. And there are others of us, I won't say us, because then that includes me, and then that gets us and them. Then there are others in the room that are like, it's just a game. It's no big deal. It doesn't really matter to us, right? So when it's important to us and it's that active displeasure, this is when it begins to matter. That's where the seed of anger actually begins to grow. So let's get back to that iceberg. So a picture of an iceberg. Real quick, iceberg trivia. On average, how much of an iceberg is underneath the water? Let's hear it. 2/3, 90% is what I heard. I have heard 2/3 as well, but we're going to go with the higher number. I was hoping to get more kind of auctioneer style with it and go 2/3, 2/3, give me 2/3, give me 90. Okay, 90% of an iceberg is under the water, on average. A lot of it, a majority of it, right? Anger is very much like an iceberg. What's seen at the very top is what other people see. That's what gets expressed. That is maybe the loud voices, that is maybe the throwing things, or this we're not getting into aggression, right? How we express our anger. Anger is what's seen, but really what is really going on is beneath the surface. And for many of us, for a lot of our lives, a lot is going on, and this is myself included. Under the surface are actually the real, like the primary feelings, because anger within the field of psychology is referred to as a secondary emotion. We'd say that you can't feel anger until you feel something else before. We're talking like microseconds. So before anger actually gets expressed, really what we're feeling is maybe humiliation or fear or sadness or resentment or disappointment or loneliness or loss of control. That's a real big one. Guilt or shame, or the list goes on and on and on. So anger, actually, what we see on top, that's kind of the easy stuff. And for whatever reason, there's actually a whole weekend full of reasons why it's more acceptable for you know, one gender to be able to express anger than another, and that's not very fair. I'm a father of two daughters, and I don't like that, right? But for whatever reason, we have like social norms on how it's okay for men or how it's okay for women to feel angry and how it's not okay, right? And a lot of times with anger, particularly for, we'll say in general, for men here in the West, that's okay to be, you know, because it's tough, because you want to gain control, because you want to do that. But really what's going on is that individual is feeling afraid, or they're feeling humiliated, or they're feeling disrespected. And so anger is used as this last-ditch effort to regain control maybe of a situation. So what's happening underneath the surface is what's really happening. And for many of us, we haven't gone under the water for a long, long time. And we can't get into a group therapy session right now. That would take way too long. And it's already way too in here. But just know that it's okay and that God can handle what's under the surface. Jesus is there with you on what's happening under the surface, that maybe the trauma or the tragedies or the hurt that you've experienced in your past that you're experiencing right now, maybe that is what's causing the short fuse, the irritability, because that's kind of easier to show, especially in our culture, just to snap back at someone or to try and get our way, to show anger rather than saying to someone, I'm feeling really lonely right now, and that's why I'm upset. It really isn't about that you came home late. It's about that I feel lonely. That's a totally different conversation than like, how'd you disrespect me? You said you're going to be home at this time, this sort of thing, right? So anger is just the tip of the iceberg. Anger also, let's switch images. Anger is also the guard dog of emotions. It's the guard dog, which is also like another perfect illustration of what anger is like. Anger's the guard dog. Guard dogs, what do they look like? Give me some help. What was that?
Scary.
There we go. That's a great adjective. What else? Guard dogs also look like what?
Wolves.
Wolves? Oh, great, great. What do those teeth look like? They're sharp teeth. Are they quiet? Are they loud? Loud, scary, or very approachable? Right? You hear me? These are big, loud, snarly, got like slobbery jowls, and they're like intimidating, and they're there to do a job to protect everything. To do what? To protect everything behind it. All the valuables behind that collar and that chain. To make sure that no one goes close to those. It's in the same way with our emotions. Anger is a thing that shows, puffs up, it's loud, it's scary, it keeps everyone away from these valuables and these vulnerables behind it. For all of us. And sometimes that has been a survival skill for us, and that's a way that we're even existing in this moment, because you had to maybe survive that way. I'm here to tell you that it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to continue to look like that. It's in dealing with stuff under the surface. It's in dealing what's behind the guard dog is where Jesus wants to restore and wants to renew, wants to really make you whole again. So really, today, as we're talking about how to be angry, like, we're not really talking about angry. It's what comes before that, all the things underneath the surface, all the things behind the barking, snarling, teeth-sharp guard dog that is anger, all right? Again, nothing wrong with the guard dog. Guard dog's doing its job. That's what a guard dog does. Iceberg's just floating along. That's fine. It can't help it that only a little bit's showing, right? So we're not assigning any kind of value there. But it's underneath and it's behind is what really is what matters. And thus concludes part one of how to be angry. Okay, now we're going to go part two to personal and practical. Are you ready? Because I'm going to share some stories about me that I'm not proud of, but I need your commitment on this, that you're going to be on my team. Because I'm going to share some things that's something that I've been struggling with since December of this last year. Don't worry, it's not going to get too uncomfortable, but I just need you to stay with me here. And I'm going to share some things, like I said, I'm not proud of. I am definitely not the hero in this story on how I've behaved. Some of y'all are really nervous. Okay? Let me show you what's been going on lately. Let's go to this next picture and the cause of my anger. Don't you dare on. You're on my team. We had a deal, right? This is Pippa. Pippa the puppy. No. When you aw, my heart hurts. She's now like, I don't know, older than she was yesterday. She was born in October. We got her in December. I had completely forgotten how much is involved in having a puppy. Completely thought it would be just like a goldfish, is what I pictured. Let me show you another picture. Pippa the puppy, Lucy right here. Lucy's over across the way in the cottage. Lucy calls her little cinnamon roll. I'm telling y'all, it hurt. You're on my team. Stay with me here. Stay with me. And this last one, we have Pippa's favorite toy, her little heart. It's a squeaky toy. We call it tu corazón, her heart, your heart in Spanish. And she said, tu cora, oh, tu cora. And she picks it up and she brings it over to us and she always wants to play. And it's cute and it's cuddly. And time out, I know, woe is me. This is what I get angry about. But it's very applicable and it's very practical. So just stay with me, okay? Everything is fine. We're going to keep her. It's good. She's not up for sale or anything. But for the right bidder, we might be able, no, everything is fine. But I want to tell you in a very practical sense, before December, my life was magical. My living room was so relaxing, problem-free. I could lie on the couch. I could doze off. I could be in the kitchen and not have to worry about every little thing that's on the edge of the counter because an eight-month-old with a tongue this long is going to take whatever's off the counter and rip it down. We could have our trash cans not protected because she goes in there and gets the toilet paper. There's squeaky toys all over the place. And have you ever stepped on one of those in the pitch black of night and it's completely silent and you step on that? There's nothing more scary. It's infuriating. It really, really is. I'm being very real. Like, it's aggravating, infuriating. Since March of 2020, the AHA family has had family movie night every Friday night, without fail. Every Friday night, we watch a movie. We usually have pizza. Sometimes it's Chipotle or Chick-fil-A or what's the other one? In-N-Out. That's right. Yeah, In-N-Out, of course, right? That's what we do. Since Pippa, we now watch a movie in like 14 different sessions because she is barking the entire time because she's like, everyone's down in the living room. Let's play. Let's play. Let's play. Let's play. And then you got to get up and put her on the leash. And some of you, I'm like, there's anxiety increasing in the room right now. How do you think I feel? Right? Right? All we're trying to do is watch the 1992 cinematic masterpiece by Whoopi Goldberg, Sister Act. On Friday, it's a story of absolute victory. She goes from the lounge singing halls of Reno to San Francisco, and the Pope comes and visits her church. But Pippa's not having it. She wants to play and have the rips. And here's the thing. Pippa, all those toys, all those half-chewed bones that I'm stepping on in the middle of the night, all the squeaky toys that terrify me, all of the baby gate that squeaks every time you open it, it's an everlasting souvenir that I am not in charge of my home. It is a never-ending reminder that I am not in charge. This is where we turn the corner a little bit. That's what anger is. It's this very unpleasant reminder that we are not in control. Because if we were in control, it certainly wouldn't look like this. And I know probably, she's getting better every day, actually, and it'll probably be fine in like 3 or 4 years. But or not, whatever, but I am not in charge, and that'll be key as we continue on. And this is just a reminder for us, and yes, it's kind of a whimsical example, and there's other far more serious ones, but this is something that I was like, this is the most potent source of where anger is at in my life right now, coming home and wanting just to relax, and Pippa has been inside all day because it's 154 degrees outside, and she needs to go on a walk. Or else she's going to destroy everything around, right? I don't want to do that. If I was in charge, if my will be done, I would be able just to come home and just to sit down and just to relax. But it's different. Mark chapter 6, starting in verse 30. We're going to put these two together now. Mark chapter 6 and verse 30. For those of you familiar with the life and teachings of Jesus, this will be very familiar. And I'd be willing to bet for those of you that are relatively new, this will also be a familiar story. Spoiler alert, there's 5,000 men, approximately 20,000 people, and Jesus feeds them all. That's the story. Out of 5 loaves and 2 fishes. So if you've never heard the story, I'm going to spoil the ending. And this usually from the pulpit is like, and this is how God can use even our most meager offerings to do something to restore the world, to heal others. And that's a great sermon. That's great. That's not going to be where we're going to take it today. It's going to be very different because we're talking about how to be angry, right? So let's look at it from a different perspective. Mark chapter 6 and verse 30. And it goes exactly like this. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. See, miracles are happening. They're preaching sermons. They're ministering to others in the streets. Think like last week, Impact Africa. And there was a beautiful 15-year-old girl named Bella up here. Her last name might be Aha, and she was sharing all the things that God had done through that. So this, think that same thing. The ministry teams come back to Jesus, and then we did this, and then we did this, and then this happened, and then this happened. And then because so many people were coming and going, they did not even have a chance to eat. Right here, we have biblical proof that hangry existed back then. And if you're unfamiliar with the word, it's when you are short-fused, easily irritated, and you snap at others, and it's not because you have a, you know, kind of a unpleasant personality. It's because it's 3 o'clock and you haven't had lunch. You're hungry, and you're angry. You're hangry, all right? So put yourselves in the shoes of the disciples here. They already had a long day, haven't had a chance to eat. Jesus comes with some good news. He says to them, come with me by yourselves to go a quiet place and get some rest. And man, the jubilation that brought. Oh, great. We can go away with Jesus. Jesus several times throughout the Gospels is telling us this, come with me. I'll restore you. I'll bring you peace. I'll take care of you. I'll replenish you. The word restore is where we get the word restaurant. Here at Emmaus, we're about restoring all things. See this tie-in? Jesus says, come with me. We'll get alone. We'll get away from this. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. So people saw the boat crossing and said, they're going over there to this port, let's beat them. So they sprint there and they thought they were going to get there and have a relaxing place. And there was 20,000 pippas just waiting to be fed and waiting to be played with. All right? Can you imagine the frustration? Now, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, we get the feelings that Jesus has. He had compassion. Guarantee you, even though it doesn't say this, guarantee you the disciples, no compassion. They weren't like, oh, they're like sheep without a shepherd, aren't they, Jesus? And then Jesus says, yes, they're like sheep without a shepherd. You're right. No, I would imagine some resentment, these people. Those kind of thoughts and feelings, right? Jesus has compassion on them. There's empathy. He wants to do something. He wants to serve them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time, it was late in the day. So still, we haven't eaten yet. Disciples are still serving other people. It wasn't in an air-conditioned room like this. They're outdoors. Disciples say, this is very, very real, very human. Identify very much with this. Disciples, we're out in the middle of nowhere. This is a remote place. It's very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. Jesus, can you just get them out of here? My gosh, these people. Jesus doesn't take the bait. He doesn't go like, no, they are not. They are this. That doesn't do it. He says, you give them something to eat. You do it. Which probably came as a shock, a complete shock, maybe even insulting, like us. And so then we get an insight into one or some of them absolutely back-talking the Lord Almighty right here. Because in the Greek, this is called sarcasm, what's about to happen. And in English, it's called sarcasm too. That would take more than a half a year's wages. Parentheses, that would take $52,800 according to the U.S. Census of 2020 for the average salary in California for 6 months. $52,000. And this isn't something that the disciples are saying to be helpful. You hear the tone like, oh yeah, that's going to cost 52, this is going to, a whole half year's wages to feed all these people. Are we going to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them? Jesus, again, doesn't go like, do you have any idea who you're talking to? Or watch your tone with me. Or how dare you? How many loaves do you have? What do you have? Jesus, mission-focused. Always. Mission-focused. Not taking the bait. And yes, let's put that as a pun on the fish that comes later. All right? How many loaves do you have? Why don't you go and see? Oh, and I'm sure they really, really loved to go and check that out. Begrudgingly, they left, right? And they found out, and they probably thought it was case closed. Well, Jesus, there's five. Five loaves, two fish. Told you. That's it. You know it was some sarcasm there, just kind of like, what are you going to do with that? Oh, just perform a miracle. And then Jesus directs them to have all the people sit down in groups and on the green grass, which again, we have mounting, I'm certain, frustration, irritation, resentment, anger. Now we got to do this. He has us out in the middle of nowhere. Is he tricking us? He told us to come out here. He knew these people were going to be. You can sense this, right? So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties and taking the loaves and the two fish. Jesus looks to heaven. He gives thanks. He breaks the loaves. He gave them to his people, gives them out to all of them. He also divided the two fish among them all. They all ate, all 20,000 estimated. Bible scholars say there's probably 20,000 people here. They pick up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. I don't know how long that fish was going to be good for, but still Mark tells us that, hey, there was leftovers, right? The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. What does this have to do with puppies and with anger? Jesus is in control, not his disciples. Jesus is in charge, not us. Jesus has it all worked out, not us. Jesus is the manager of the universe. We didn't get accepted for that job. It's him. And the disciples, if they had their way, things would have happened very, very, very differently. Because again, anger, one of the biggest fears is a loss of control, of not being in charge. And that's almost always at the very, like, the nucleus of anger, is that fear of not being in control. Because we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe we grew up in environments where when we didn't have control, things got literally dangerous. And I have compassion for you. And it's understandable, maybe it was a survival skill. I would encourage you to process that in environments where maybe that can provide some healing for you. But even Jesus knows that it's not okay down here. See, the first request of Jesus in the Lord's Prayer, you know, that real, like, the, one of the greatest hits of all the prayers, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, his first request, your will be done, your kingdom come, not mine. Your kingdom come is like, Father, come fix this mess. Make it look like down here as if you were fully reigning, fully in control. Make it look like that. Because there's a lot of things going on down here. Even Jesus identifies us with us and says, things need to be fixed around here. That's the first request we get from Jesus. God, you're in control. Would you make it right down here? Would your will be done? Not my will be done. I'm not in charge. You are. So three things. This is the last three things. Three things, three practices to put into play over the next 7 days. Three practices on our How to Be Angry series. Number one. Pray the Lord's Prayer with a focus on the first request of Jesus. Your kingdom come, your will be done. In essence, not my will, not my empire, not what I'm trying to do. God, may it be yours. You're way better at managing things than I am. And yes, there may be some out here right now that are thinking, but what about when I lost this someone in the last few years or few months? Are you telling me that Jesus was in control of that? That's definitely a but what about, a BWA. And there's some definite conversation to have around that. But I can tell you, even in the midst of that, and even still today, he is in control. He grieves with you, and he's there with you in it. Your kingdom come, your will be done. Number two, the second practice is when something doesn't go your way, and it will, and something will not go your way, definitely. Say to yourself or out loud, whichever is most appropriate, I'm not in charge. God is. It's a surrender to, like, the truest reality that exists. I'm not in charge, God. you are. Maybe give one of these a try this week. Last thing is this. Notice when you're feeling angry. This is probably the most vulnerable and the toughest, but I invite you anyway, because I see potential in us out here. Notice when you're angry. And just for a moment, pause and reflect what's going on under the surface. For some of you, that may be the first time in decades that's happened, the first time in years. Feel what's underneath the surface there. Feel what's behind the guard dog. And if it means connecting with someone that you trust and that you love, if it means giving a professional a phone call, I encourage you to do that. There's healing that wants to take place there, that Jesus is there in the midst of it. Your kingdom come, your will be done. I'm not in charge. God is. Under the surface. Let's go underneath the iceberg. Amen? Let's pray. Lord Jesus, thank you for being on the throne. It's a much better fit for you than it is for us. We belong to you. May your will be done. May we be willing to be willing. Help us to surrender our wants, our needs to you, God. And would you soften our hearts, give us an open mind to hear what you might be saying through these words and through these next 5 weeks. In Jesus' name, amen.